Welcome back to The Wine Show on 96.5 Inner FM. You've got Simon Nash and Nick Montague, and we're going to have a chat now with Jane Faulkner from Wine Matters. She has just been judging the Alternative Varieties Wine Show up in Mildura. Good morning to you, Jane.
Good morning, Simon and Nick.
Good morning, Jane.
So tell us a little bit about the week you've just had, because it sounds fantastic, and we're always very excited to hear about the how the alternative varieties are going and coming along.
Well, they're doing very well. It's been a fabulous week. I'm actually the chief of judges, and it was but my last year, so that's why I've got a bit of a husky voice today. But feeling great. Look, an excellent week. About 800 wines were judged.
Yep.
And 101 varieties, alternative varieties in the mix there, and ended up with something like 89 golds, 126 silvers, and 309 bronzes. So an excellent result. Really strong classes this year, which was great to see, particularly with Sangiovese and Tempranillo. And that, you know, I'm really, really thrilled about that, because I think, you know, they went through a bit of a lull where they've been around for a while. They're still alternative because not a great deal of them around, although, you know, that might change in the next year or so in terms of numbers. And but they were such strong classes, and they looked, you know, they looked like Sangiovese. They, well, tasted like Sangiovese, tasted like Tempranillo, but really great savoury styles, not just sort of fruity examples that we often can see from warmer climates if those varieties are planted there. And I was rapt. So I'm sort of leaving on a high in a way, because they look so good, and also leaving on a high because a white wine won the best wine of show.
Wow, what was it?
It was Art Wines in the Groove, Gruner Veltliner.
Yeah.
And it's a rockin' wine. It's grown in the Adelaide Hills, so cooler climate, which is where Gruner needs to be. And I love the name anyway, In the Groove, so how can you not like that wine? But what was wonderful is we had Madeline Strenworth, who was a master of wine, and she's was the international judge. She hails from Sweden, but spent 6 months travelling overseas. She's an incredibly busy woman and a delight to have, terrific palate and insight. And she actually picked that wine as her wine to watch, as in, you know, her international judge's wine of choice, I guess. And as it turned out, it was the wine that also won Best Wine of Show. And she just said, which I find extraordinary and fabulous, particularly for the owners, that it, for her, the whole class of Gruner Veltliners were the best she'd seen outside of Austria. And so that's an incredible accolade for the variety anyway. And, you know, it's been here for a few years, but just starting to gain traction now, particularly in the Adelaide Hills, where there are a lot of people working, making great stuff, like Harndorf Hill. But on this occasion, it was Art Wine that took out the trophy. So pretty cool.
So Gruner needs that sort of cooler style of climates to
yeah, it does. Well, it particularly needs to cool down at night, so, you know, to hold its acidity. I mean, it does certainly get warmer in parts of Austria where it's grown, particularly around the Vacau. And obviously Adelaide Hills gets warmer during the day, but it cools down at night. So it's perfect for that variety. And the thing that was lovely about the wine, it does have a bit of texture, but it's really got this kind of long, linear palate. So it's delicious. But, you know, it does have a texture to it. It's not one of these racy Riesling type of wines. So, but it's not heavy. You know, that's what I like about it too, and really, really lovely aromatic. So it's actually one of my favourite grape varieties, I have to say, because it's incredibly versatile with food, particularly vegetables of all things, and, you know, asparagus in particular. But with lighter foods, it's terrific.
Yeah, we were at a 50th last night, and we were drinking one from, I think it was from Austria.
It was there was something from Adelaide Hills as well, wasn't there? I thought, or was that something?
That wasn't that though. But
right.
But you, like you said, it was. So this was a Spanish restaurant, and beautiful with the cuisine. You know,
it was fantastic.
It was, but across a whole lot of different dishes, you know, and exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, it's incredibly versatile. So, I feel like cracking a bottle open today, and I just might do so. Maybe not quite now, but in a couple of hours. Although I have been up since about 5 o'clock to catch that early flight home.
Yeah. So how was the lunch yesterday?
Oh, look, stupendous. It's, you know, the long lunch. It's famous in Mildura for, you know, part of the wine show because it's a very quick turnaround where we actually announce the trophy winners. But it's also, you know, people from the public come along. It's just so cool. So you've obviously got the producers there, or some of them, and sponsors, without whom there would be no wine show. And it's just like a big celebration. It's like being at, you know, someone's either, you know, big Italian lunch or big Greek lunch. It's just wonderful. And Stefano De Pieri, that legend that he is, you know, organises the food. And it's a fun, cheery day. Obviously, I had a bit of a tear as I was leaving to announce the new chief of judges, who's wonderful, and that's Sophie Otten, who's a wonderful woman from Sydney, very well known, highly regarded, and awarded sommelier. She owns her own little bar called She Loves You, but she also works with Kylie Kwong at Billy Kwong, and it was lovely. So crying to say goodbye. I mean, it was almost like leaving your family to go overseas.
But how many years have you been doing it for, Joan?
Oh, look, I really shouldn't say that it was seven, but I had to match Max Allen, who was the previous chief of judges, his record of 7 years, and I stayed. So it's a 7-year itch. But I think, you know, between Max and myself, there was kind of this natural progression, and you know, the show you know, every year it gets better and better, and Sophie will also take that on and make changes and improve it, because fresh eyes and a new personality will do that. But I think the show is so diverse that we probably stayed that long and it was okay, because on the whole I really don't think a chief of judges should stay really more than 4 years or so at a show, because you do need to bring new blood in and keep it alive and fresh and interesting. But I think the varieties and the breadth of knowledge that often, for, you know, journalists in particular bring, help with the discussion of the varieties that are put in there. So, yeah.
It's interesting. You met Max Allen, I think, wrote an article I was reading in the paper a couple of days ago about a Turkish grape variety that's been planted up in Dookie.
Yes.
Which I can't pronounce. I can't remember.
Bocarazé.
There you go.
I actually wrote about it in the Halliday Wine magazine, but I think being a weekly newspaper, he probably picked me to the post. I think other minds.
He might have been in the Fin Review or something.
Yes,
Friday.
His was in the Fin Review. Yep. And that was in the show, and it got a silver medal. How cool is that?
Well, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
So that process of bringing that into Australia is quite an arduous one, isn't it? So,
well, it's time consuming. Yeah. It's not for the faint hearted. You have to be really dedicated, because, you know, it has to go through the quarantine. It has to be ensured it doesn't have viruses. So, you know, it does take a long time. It's quicker these days, but when I say quicker, it's still going to take you a few years to get cuttings in for you to then eventually plant in your own vineyard. But I think that people, like Robert Paul, is one of the people behind that, and he's the winemaker who, you know, he does vintage and he consults in Turkey, and he just thought this variety, because it's a really tannic variety but delicious, it's not big and cumbersome, would do really well in Australia because it can cope with the heat, and obviously that's a good thing. But it retains its acidity and keeps its tannin structure. He said its nickname is like throat burner, which sounds pretty awful, but it's because it's so tannic. But look, I actually think, it's not. I think it's a terrific grape, and his wines are really good. I was really impressed with them. And look, yes, it's hard to pronounce, but just have a glass, you know. I think once you try something with a word that's a bit difficult, you know, even years ago, but, you know, 20 years ago, I don't think if you didn't have any Italian, you might not have been able to pronounce Sangiovese or Chianti. You know, you might have said Chianti, which is understandable. But don't let that put you off. I always, you know, it doesn't matter if you mispronounce it. After a few glasses, you'll get it right. And if you like the wine, you'll keep investigating what it is, try more producers, and you'll know something about it. So,
and that's Talus Wines, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's where the vineyard is. Yep, yep, that's right. But the wine's actually called Loken. That's the label name.
Okay.
So
yep.
Just say the variety again slowly.
Oh, yeah, I knew you were going to get me to do that. I'll tell you the correct pronunciation.
If you get to Max Allen's article, he actually does a phonetic version of it, which is helpful. Yeah.
Oh, well, I did that too. I probably wasn't... because what you're reading, the letters don't correspond in English.
No.
So you've got to, just call it the throat, and you'll get it. But no, I'll pronounce it. I'm actually wanting to look up that to see. Hold on. Keep talking. You ask me another question.
Now, John, I was going to ask you. So you finished up as the head of the show, but are you going to continue to visit the show each year and partake, or just to be there for the fun?
Look, I'd love to be there for the fun now, because now I don't have to do anything except, turn up at the lunches and hang out with people. But look, I think it's really important, even though I love Sophie and I know her very well, I think it would be slightly disconcerting if I turned up and said, hi, how are you going? need some help? No, she needs to get on and feel comfortable and bring her own sense and sensibility to that show. And her, and obviously, so I won't be going back next year to do that at all. I think that's really
just
important.
Just give her some plein air, you think?
Yeah, absolutely, because it's just one of those things you'd think, oh, am I doing something wrong there here? No, not at all. So I think that what will happen is in 2020, it'll be the 20th year the show's been going officially as the Alternative Varieties Wine Show. It actually started in 1999 as a little Sangiovese show, but then 2 years later changed.
Have to get you and Max and all the oldies back.
Oldies?
That's a terrible thing to say, Simon.
Oh, it's terrible. Mind you, I sort of looked in the mirror this morning and said, oh, that's not looking good. And I mean, I had a late night, obviously, but I wasn't really on the turfs. But, we had some lovely wines to celebrate last night. And, they were trying to send me out in style, as you do.
Now, tell me, up in the Riverina itself, which is obviously could grow some of these alternative varieties quite well, is there much coming out of the Riverina?
There's definitely stuff coming out of the Riverina. But, Riverina to one side is a bit different to Riverland, which is closer to Mildura, just in terms of geography there. The thing is, a lot of these great varieties that we're seeing thrive in warmer climates. Mm. Things like the Italian Nero d'Avola, obviously Vermentino, the white, and Fiano, and a number of other varieties. Arinto, which is a Portuguese variety that Ashley Ratcliffe is growing with his Ricotera brand and doing really well. So, certain Spanish and Portuguese varieties will thrive in those areas. And when I say that, they hold their acidity. They can cope with the heat. So that means the wines aren't going to fall over and become flabby with the white varieties.
Mm.
So they retain this freshness and ability to stay youthful. And there's an unfortunate perception, particularly among connoisseurs, but perhaps generally that only cool climate grape varieties are the be all and end all.
Yeah.
Hence, Chardonnay and Pinot Noir. But that's not. That's not true. It's just, of course, they're fantastic grape varieties. And, if you would go to Portugal or parts of Italy and say that, oh, these varieties are no good, well, they are. I mean, Alianico grows in Campania, and I think that's one of the greatest grape varieties. Just needs to be given the same attention as you would, say, Pinot Noir, but it's a warmer climate variety. So we shouldn't differentiate. I think what's unfortunate, there's just that perception because these areas that are actually doing well with the varieties, the Riverland, they're sort of the engine rooms of the Australian wine industry because they also grow, varieties that go into bag in the box and the less expensive wine. So it all gets you know, thrown in together, that image. And I just think, no, you've got to stand back and say, well, hold on a minute. You know, maybe hunt these varieties out and try them and make up your own mind, because they're really cool.
And don't be prejudiced when you say it's come from Riverland, for instance, or River, you know, Riverland.
Absolutely. And I think the, you know, I always say to producers, put on the label where you grow the grapes or where you've sourced them from. I think that's a really good thing. Be proud of that you're growing, you know, Arinto in the Riverland, or, you know, Narrodabla, well, McLaren Vale, which is which is a highly regarded region, but also a warmer one. And I think that Nero is doing really well there. Coriol took out best red trophy. Actually, what did they take out? I should tell you that exactly. Yes, best red. They won that for their Nero, which is delicious. Mm. You know, it's a fresher style, and I like that, because some of the Nero doublers from Sicily, you know, went through a phase where they were pitching it a bit more to the American market, and, you know, unfortunately what that meant was a lot of oak. And the variety doesn't need new oak, if at all. It does well in stainless steel, but older oak can also bring another layer of complexity to it. And I think Australian producers have cottoned onto that early and are starting to get that right in a very short space of time. It's a great wine for summer. You know, if you want to chill it down, go ahead.
Yeah.
You know, it's great. So, yeah, be open-minded. That's what I say about great varieties and where they're grown. Because, you know, I certainly can't afford Burgundy these days. And while I certainly buy, you know, Australian Pinot Noir, I don't want to always drink that. I want to drink other stuff.
Yeah.
There's so much out there. I don't understand, and I feel sorry for people who just say they drink Sauvignon Blanc and Shiraz, because, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that, wow, do you have pizza every night?
Mm.
And no, you don't. You know, it's this, the different foods that we eat in Australia. It's a variety. We're very multicultural, and we've got all the wines to suit those cuisines.
How does an alternative variety establish itself as an alternative variety for the show, Joan? Like, how does
Well, if it's brand new to Australia, the Turkish grape, Bau Azkere, is the pronunciation.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So I had to get that back in. You know, that's the only variety in Australia, that's the only one in Australia, that planting. Jim Barry with his Assertico, which is a Greek white, which is gorgeous. And I think that got the 2017 got a gold, which was great to see. That's the only planting in Australia. So there's that rare factor.
Yep.
So people trying to bring new varieties in, obviously the Charmers are highly regarded for bringing Italian grape varieties in, and they've just recently brought in Pecorino and Falanghina, which is very cool. And Pecorino is definitely one to watch. So it's rare. But that might also mean, for example, we have a small class for fortifies, because Palomino, which goes into what's called a Pera, but known as sherry styles, is rare these days, because it's you know, not the, you know, fortifies aren't the backbone of the Australian industry as they once were. So there's a class for those, and then it's you know, the number of hectares. Now, we're not prescriptive. You know, obviously, Pinot Gris, Grigio was once alternative. And then, you know, once you start seeing that, you know, particularly bag in a box and it's everywhere and the plantings are enormous, you know, that had to be retired, and that was done a number of years ago.
Yep.
And probably Prosecco is going to be heading that way very soon.
Yep.
So that's growing exponentially. But I'm hearing some interesting reports about Prosecco. It just... It's illegal, but I'm hearing stuff that, you know, there's a lot of other varieties going into Prosecco. So I don't know what's going on there, and I need to check that out. So it might be unwittingly, you know, the plantings are there and other grape varieties are going through. So we just have to watch Prosecco. You know, we're having a fight with the Italians about using that name. And it is a great variety. Australians should be allowed to use it, and no question about that. But that's you know, grows so quickly because people are loving it, and then, which is great, but then what happens? People jump on the bandwagon, and instead of making really good Prosecco, it just becomes the next kind of Sauvignon Blanc. Mm. And it's everywhere, and it's a bit same-same. So, you know, that sort of is a bit disappointing. But the good producers, they're good. They're going to be making good stuff. And, in fact, Michael Dalzotto was a judge, and he brought along to the judge's dinner a Col Fondo, which is basically like a pet nat but made from Prosecco. And it was so delicious. Crisp and dry. It's probably the best I've had in Australia, the best Prosecco. Now, it won't be for everyone. Tiny volumes, like I think he made 50 cases just to try it. And it is cloudy, so, you know, people might go, ooh, but, you know, but it, the flavour, oh, it was seriously fantastic. So, you know, if you do manage to get to the Cellar Door at Del Sotto, make sure you try that. It's a ripper.
Well, the King Valley's just fantastic for the Prosecco as the original.
Yeah. Well, yeah. They were the first, Del Sotto.
The original producers
in Australia,
Exactly. Jane, your tenure has been 7 years, and Max was seven before that.
Yeah.
What do you think Max was seeing in his first year compared to what you saw in your last year as far as the number of wines entered and the number of category or classes? Can you imagine back to what that would have been like?
Yeah, look, it's a really good question. I have been reflecting on that, you know, not just recently, but over time, because when you're there, you're so busy, you know, doing the work, and then you sort of come back home and you don't get a chance to look at every wine and review all the notes. But I do reflect on it because you then start to see trends. So obviously the trends to trying to make fresher, more slurpable drinking wines, although they're still more structured and potentially more age-worthy wines entered into the show. You know, when I first got involved, you know, obviously I travel a lot, and so I drank a lot of these wines in their home country anyway, so it was no surprise to me. I guess I didn't expect to see so quickly so many varieties come into play. Now, saying that, if you ask the people who bought it in, for example, the Charmers and their Italian varieties, they would probably say, you know, it's a lifetime of work, but... I've been amazed by how some varieties have adapted so quickly and been made into wines really well in a short time, and Nera Dubbel is definitely one of those. And I just the sheer breadth of varieties, it's astonishing. And I think it's so great. And, you know, it really fills me with joy that I can talk to people in Italy and tell them about these Italian wines, or when I'm in Portugal saying, oh, you know, we've got a Rinto and we've got all these other red varieties. That's a white one, but other reds that we make. And you know, we've got Gruner Veltliner. So when I go to Austria, I say, oh, you know, our Gruner's doing well. And there's that kind of international conversation you can have. And it's not that we're making wines that are the same, because, of course, you can't. Mm. They're taking on that kind of Aussie badge, I guess, or a sense of place within Australia. And that's an important thing. You know, I'm just mentioning Pinot Noir before, but it took a while, but, you know, I really got fed up when producers were saying, oh, you know, I'm making Burgundy or Chambertin. I'm going, oh, no, you're not. It's nowhere close to that. Mm. And why would you want to do that? Find your patch of land and what it expresses. And, you know, well, find the good sites first, potentially good sites, and then take it from there. And that's what it comes down to with all these varieties. When I'm drinking an Australian Nebbiolo, I'm wanting to see how it's expressing its place, and obviously some varietal context. You know, you want the tar and roses, perhaps, or the, you know, you get boot polish, believe it or not, and those really beautiful tannins. Mm. But it's not Barolo or Barbaresco, and neither do I want it to be. Yep. You know, because there is Barolo and Barbaresco, so I want the Aussie rendition, and I love it when you go, that's a cracking wine, and in a wine show context, you go, it's gold, you know, gold medal. I just find that a thrill. So, yeah, it's been one hell of a journey, I can tell you. And, you know, it was a perfect week because the weather was great. perfect weather yesterday for the long lunch, and I felt it was perfect that I was leaving and handing over to someone who's absolutely wonderful and is going to do, you know, is going to be fabulous for that show. So everything was right, you know. It was like, oh, yeah. So, yeah, it was lovely.
Fantastic. Well, congratulations on all of that, because it's just everywhere now, this stuff. And every person Simon and I talk to just about on the wine show has an alternative variety story somewhere in the
exactly.
mix.
Even we spoke with Keita Zilm, who was previously at O'Leary Walker for 16 years.
Yeah.
And now working with Phil Lehman at WD Wines. And, you know, she was talking about their Gruner in Clare and, you know, how they were... They're playing with it to try and work out what their style was going to be. So here's this variety that grows, you know, it's native to Austria or whatever. It's, but it's now in the Clare, really good climate for it. But what do we do? Do we leave sugar in it? Do we not? Do we do, you know? And so that's exciting. And as you said, it's exciting to see that these wines have come to be really great wines so quickly. You know, they've worked out all of those steps they need to produce the wine that's going to be perfect for their, you know, their situation.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, it's an evolution. I don't think, you know, some just sort of find a region and do well, but it takes time. You know, it does take time to work out a variety, and unfortunately, you know, it's vintage and it comes but once a year, so you've only got one chance to perhaps do some experimentation, and if you've only got a small batch or, you know, small planting just to test it, you know, makes it very hard. So so I credit to those people who do that, and plenty of the producers, you know, experiment and then realize, okay, that didn't work, or, you know, it didn't need oak, so next year I'm going to try this, or have a few little experiments on the go. And, you know, credit to them, because that's time consuming and expensive to a degree, because with a, you know, with a vineyard, most growers would say to you, you know, you can start really seeing what it is at 15 years of age. I mean, young vines will give you an indication, say, but you've got to then wait another 10, 15 years before it really settles in and starts going, yep, I'm something. And I, you know, that's a costly exercise. I get that. But, you know, I would say to people, if you're going to choose a variety, do your homework. Don't follow trends. Find something that will work to your backyard. Do your homework in terms of climate, soil, what's working, and do it that way. And if it happens to be a variety like, you know, Barazkare, then, okay, and that's a hard one to put on your label. Look, I've been pronouncing it for, you know, quite a while, and plus I like Turkish wine, although few come into Australia, but what's here is pretty good. You know, make up a name and then have that on the back label. You can do other things. I think, really, Aussie wine drinkers are so accommodating and want to try other stuff. They often go back to the safe stuff because it's safe. You know, that's what they know. But if you, I just say to them, go to a wine bar, ask someone, say, can you pour me something, you know, I like Sauvignon Blanc, what's a bit different? And maybe they'll pour something like a Vermentino or Fiano, and they can try that. And, you know, people get it. They'll go, gee, that's really delicious. It's like when, oh, I don't drink Chardonnay, you know, it's really big and buttery. And, well, it once was, and some still are, but not really in Australia. I think, you know, we're making the best Chardonnay we've ever made. It's just extraordinary. That's that story that's come about fairly quickly as well. And so that's the thing. So you get these, people get a bit blinkered. So get a glass, you know, a sommelier or someone in the bar, pour them a glass and say, that's Aussie Chardonnay today. Yeah. And I think people get blown away. So with these new varieties or alternative varieties, just go out and do
it.
Be
open-minded, yeah, exactly.
Be open-minded, yeah, that's right.
Well, I think it's really exciting. And so we're going to have other reasons to chat to you now throughout the year.
But, no problem.
I'm sure there's plenty of topics. We'll get you to come back with some more of the alternative hard-to-pronounce varieties.
We can do a whole show on those hard-to-pronounce varieties, and that'd be fun.
Yeah, very good, absolutely. Well, Jane, have a well-earned rest today, and thank you very much for fitting us into your schedule.
You're welcome. Thanks, Simon. Nick, great to talk, and happy drinking.
You too.
Thank you, Jane.
Okay, cheers.
Thanks, Jane.
Bye.
Thanks.